Walpurgisnacht, the Hexennacht, the last night of April, the night of witches when evil walks abroad. He stood at a desolate and lonely place where there would be no interruption, no prying eyes. The air smelled metallic with freshly spilt blood. The body of a decapitated virgin kid goat lay nearby. He had no alloyed metal about him, but for a thin-bladed sword of fine steel he held in his right hand. That arm was naked, his shirt sleeve rolled up to the biceps. A silver coin wrapped in paper nestled in his waistcoat pocket. Before him burned a fire of white wood. His name was Johannes Cabal, and he was summoning a demon. O Arios, Almorzin, Arios, Membrot! The chanted names faded into the unusually still night air. Only the crackling of the fire accompanied him. Janna, Etit Namus, Zariat Natmix, and so on. He drew a deep breath and sighed, bored with the ritual. A-E-A-J-A-T-M-O. There was hidden meaning in the names he must call, the letters he must chant. That didn't mean he had to approve or even be impressed by them. As he recited the grand conjuration, he thought that some magicians might have better served the world by writing crossword puzzles. Then space distorted, and he was no longer alone. The demon's name was Lucifuge Rofocale. He stood a little taller than Cabal, 6 feet, but the bizarre fool's cap he wore, three flopping horns, or perhaps tentacles, ending with arrowheads, made his height vary from moment to moment. In one hand he held a bag containing, at least symbolically, the riches of the world. In the other, a golden hoop. He wore a segmented, studded leather skirt, rather like a Roman soldier's. Beneath it, fur-covered legs ended in hooves. He had a fat anteater's tail and a silly little Hercule Poirot moustache. As is often the case with demons, Lucifuge looked like an anatomical game of consequences.
"Lo!" cried the demon. "I am here. What dost thou seek of me? Why dost thou disturb my repose? Smite me no more with that dread rod."
He looked at Cabal.
"Where's your dread rod?"
"I left it at home," replied Cabal. "Didn't think I really needed it."
"You can't summon me without a dread rod," said Lucifuge, appalled.
"You're here, aren't you?"
"Well, yes, but under false pretenses. You haven't got a goatskin, or two vervain crowns, or two candles of virgin wax made by a virgin girl and duly blessed. Have you got the stone called Emmetil?"
"I don't even know what Emmetil is." Neither did the demon. He dropped the subject and moved on.
"Four nails from the coffin of a dead child? Don't be fatuous. Half a bottle of brandy?"
"I don't drink brandy."
"It's not for you."
"I have a hip flask," said Cabal, and threw it to him. The demon caught it and took a dram.
"Cheers," said Lucifuge, and threw it back.
They regarded each other for a long moment.
"This really is a shambles," the demon added finally. "What did you summon me for, anyway?"
The gates of hell are an impressive structure. A great adamantine finger of rock, a mile in diameter and 2 miles high, punches through the surface of the cracked and baking desert plain of Limbo. On one side of this impenetrable edifice are the gates themselves, massive iron constructions hundreds of feet wide and 1,000 high. Their rough, barely worked surfaces are pocked and pitted with great bolts driven through in ragged lines, huge bands of brass running across in uneven ranks. One could be forgiven for thinking hell's a popular place to get into. Perhaps, surprisingly, it is. On the outside, one wonders what happens once you pass through that terrible, cruel portal. Some believe that all hell is somehow crammed within the rock, a place where dimensions mean nothing. Others say that immediately beyond the gates, within the hollowed rock, is a great chasm that opens into the pit of hell, and that those stepping within must surely plunge straight to their eternal dooms. Others believe that the rock conceals the top of a very big escalator. Nobody on the outside knows for sure, but everyone wants to find out, and they want to find out because anything, anything is better than the forms. Lots of forms, stacks of forms, an average of 9,747 of them were required to gain entrance to hell. The largest form ran to 15,497 questions, the shortest to just 5, but 5 of such subtle phraseology, labyrinthine grammar, and malicious ambiguity that released into the mortal world, they would certainly have formed the basis of a new religion, or at the least, a management course. This, then, was the first torment of hell, as engineered by the soul of a bank clerk. Nobody had to fill in the forms, of course, but given that the alternative was eternity spent naked in an endless desert that has never known night, most people found themselves sooner or later queuing up at the small porter's door set into one of hell's gates. There they would receive a form entitled Infernal Regions, brackets, Local Authority, close brackets, Hades Admission Application, Provisional, brackets, AAAA, forward stroke, 342, close brackets, and a soft pencil. Congers of hopeful applicants wound around the gatehouse, like a line drawn by somebody wanting to find out how much writing you could get out of a box of ballpoints. The formerly quiet desert hummed to a steady drone of sub-vocalized reading and flipped pages. New arrivals and old hands queued patiently at the porter's door to hand in and receive forms. The quickest route through the paper trail necessitated the completion of 2,785, but nobody had yet fulfilled the extremely narrow conditions that would permit such a speedy passage. Most could anticipate 3 or 4 times as many, not counting forms rejected for mistakes. The hand-picked team of administrative imps that dealt with admissions didn't like errors at all, nor did they issue erasers.